Welcome to the weekly sermon podcast of Valley Grove Baptist Church. We are thankful you stopped by to hear from God's Word, to grow closer to Him, and to be inspired to reach your area of influence. All right, if you got your Bibles, let's find John chapter 13. John chapter 13. We're going to jump right back in to the Gospel of John. As I was planning out and looking into this year, I thought we might have a couple weeks off before we got back into John after Christmas. But my goal is to have us at the resurrection story on Easter. And I'm just worried. I know myself, I think a little well enough now at this point that I know I might get a little too wordy on one or two sermons, and dare say we have to rush through some of the latter chapters to get to the resurrection story. So I'd rather build in a little margin to make sure we can get there on time. So that's why we're back in John 13. And I had no idea, obviously, that given where we would be and what we've talked about, that we would be in John 13 on New Year's Day. But what I think it's a great passage to start the day, to start the year, to kind of set the tone for the year. Because we're going to do a lot of things this year. But I hope we do what this passage shows us today, as we'll learn about it as we go along today. So let's jump right in. We left Jesus just by way of kind of jogging our memories, because I know it was, you know, before Thanksgiving when we ended. We left him in chapter 12, and it's right around the Passover time, and Jesus is in Jerusalem. He's rode in, had the triumphal entry. He's come in. Some Greeks have wanted to see him, and that kind of signaled for him that his time has finally come, which that kind of phrase, the hour is here, this time has come, is John's way of saying that the death of Jesus is now imminent. For the previous 11 chapters, it has been, my time has not yet come, but now it is come. And so today we enter into a very unique set of chapters in John's Gospel. Because what's going to take place from this point forward, 13:1 to 18:28, so the next five chapters, roughly, Jesus is primarily going to be with his disciples. And in fact, the majority of those chapters are spent in what we know as the upper room. Some commentators believe that part of around chapter 15 probably takes place as they're making their way from the upper room to the Garden of Gethsemane. Right? And then the tail end of that, chapters 17 and 18, take place in the Garden of Gethsemane. But what you roughly have, listen to me, what you roughly have in these chapters 13:1 through 18:28 is 12 hours in the life of Jesus. You have roughly the time from Thursday late afternoon to Friday around daylight, or shortly after daylight. Because early in the morning, it says in John 18, that the Sanhedrin and the Jewish officials take Jesus to see Pilate. Okay? And so you have this very expanded amount of time. Remember I told you that when we get into the second half of John's Gospel, known as the Book of Glory, time almost slows down. And it does. We've gone from seeing, having Jesus at a festival in this season, and then the next story is a whole 3 to 6 months later. But now we've got roughly five chapters that cover 12 hours of the last night, or last 12 hours that Jesus is with his disciples. And so much of what he's going to talk about deals directly with his closest followers, which has direct application to our life. So here's what we're going to do today. We're going to jump right in. We're going to read the first five verses, as they will set the stage and give us the setting for the story. So let's read them together. Here we go. Follow along with me. Now, before the feast of the Passover, when Jesus knew that his hour had come to depart from this world to the Father. Having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. During supper, when the devil had already put it into the heart of Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, to betray him, Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands, and that he had come from God and was going back to God, rose from supper. He laid aside his outer garment, and taking a towel, tied it around his waist. Then he poured water into a basin and began to wash the disciples' feet, to wipe them with the towel that was wrapped around him. All right, so let's talk about the setting really carefully here for just a minute, because there's several things you need to know. So in these first five verses, as I've just alluded, you get the setting to the story, but then you also get, and we're going to spend just a few minutes on this, you also get Jesus's mindset going into the last few hours of his life. And so what's the setting? John tells us that they're in the upper room. They're in the upper room, okay? That it's before the Passover. Now remember, we saw that John uses that term loosely, okay? So it's sometime around Thursday evening. They're all together. They're about to eat a meal, or they've eaten a meal. There's a table set. And if you don't know, when Jews eat meals in Jesus' day, they don't sit in chairs like we do. But they recline and they lay on their left, with their like left shoulder like on like this, and they eat with their right hand, and their feet go away from the table. All right, you got that? Get that image in your mind. Excuse me. So that's kind of the setting for the story, and it's primarily with it's Jesus and the 12 who were in there. Now, John also gives us Jesus' mindset, which don't blow past this to get to the story of Jesus washing the disciples' feet. Because you got to understand, Jesus goes into this already knowing several things. And John gives us clear indication of what those several things are. Here's what he says. He says that Jesus knew his hour had come. In other words, Jesus knew that the cross was right in front of him. It wasn't a long ways off. It wasn't distant, but it was right in front of him. He knew his hour had come. Secondly, John tells us that Jesus knew the Father had given all things into his hand. Now, about 20 years ago, about this year makes 20 years ago, I read a book while I was in school. It wasn't required reading for school, but I read it because I liked the author and the title really intrigued me. The author was John MacArthur. If you're not familiar with John MacArthur, he's a great author. If you want a great study Bible, phenomenal study Bible. The John MacArthur study Bible, it is great. It's not my favorite translation. I think he uses the New King James. I like the ESV, but that's my only knock on it. It's a great study Bible. Anyway, he wrote a book that had come out a few years earlier. It was called The Murder of Jesus. And I was like, that's an interesting title. And, it's not a hard read. It's only about yay thick. And the book builds and builds and builds and builds. And then he finally answers the question. Because it's like the murder of Jesus. Was Jesus murdered? And John MacArthur's question, or the thesis of the book, it could be answered in this statement in John's gospel, because MacArthur's kind of thesis is very simply put, no, Jesus was not murdered because he willingly gave up his life. And that's what John says here. John says the Father had given all things into his hands. In other words, Jesus knew his hour was coming, and yet he still went through with it. He wasn't murdered. Nobody forcibly put him on the cross. He willingly allowed himself to be arrested, unjustly tried, and crucified. And we'll see that more in detail as we come. And then lastly, Jesus knew he was going home. In other words, Jesus knew his hour was coming. He knew he was going to die, and he knew he was going to soon be back in heaven with his Father. All right? And so Jesus knew he was going. Now look, listen to me, okay? Listen. If it's you and me, are in this situation right here, you know what we're doing? We are not about to wash people's feet. You know what we're going to do? Because I've seen you do it and I've seen myself do it. We're calling some friends and we are dragging them into the mud with us. And we are saying, woe is me. Come pity me. Call and dote on me because my life is over. I mean, if it's you and me, if we're Jesus in this scenario, we're saying, hey, guys, y'all, Bartholomew, Thaddeus, stop laughing. It's not time. Y'all need to realize I'm about to die. Why are y'all not crying? Why are y'all not upset? Y'all, I thought y'all were friends. And we're trying to drag people into our mess, right? But what does Jesus do? The exact opposite. He, instead of getting everybody to focus on the pity and the sympathy and the empathy and all of that of what's going on, what does Jesus do? He says, hey guys, not about me, it's about you. And he in turn washes the disciples' feet. Now, don't miss this. Washing feet. Now, you may not like feet. Some people like feet. I mean, there's only about one person's feet in here that I'd be willing to wash. She's sitting over here, right? Maybe the boys, maybe. They've been playing in the mud, right? Y'all gonna have to fend for yourselves now, right? Maybe your significant other or spouse will wash your feet. I don't know. But like feet, right? But foot washing was a necessary and customary part of life in Israel during Jesus' day. Remember, their shoes are like sandals, right? So there's not, you know, and there's no pave, the roads are dusty and dirty. And so it was necessary to wash your feet because they got dirty. But it was also customary in Jewish society as a sign of like hospitality and welcoming, that if someone invited you into their house, they had hand washing water and foot washing water, okay? It was customary. However, it wasn't customary for the rabbi to wash the disciples' feet. In fact, the roles would have been reversed, even at best. Most of the time, it was the lowest of the low's servant job to wash the people's feet. The one throwing the party, for example, is not washing the feet. The hired hand is washing the feet. And what does Jesus do? Knowing his hour had come, knowing that the Father had given everything into his hand, he takes off his outer jacket, puts a towel around his waist, and proceeds to go around the outside of the table and wash every one of those disciples' grimy, nasty feet. And then he comes to Peter. And what proceeds is truly great. In verse 6, Jesus gets to Peter. Now, Peter makes a statement in the form of a question. I'm going to give it to you the way we would say it. Here's what Peter says in verse 6. Lord, do you wash my feet? In other words, no, Lord, you ain't washing my feet. That's how you and I would have said it. No, you ain't washing mine. No, go wash his. You ain't washing mine. Jesus responds, what I am doing, listen to what Jesus says, okay? You got to get this one. Because this is going to give us the key, the interpretive key of how to understand the entire rest of this passage. What I am doing, you do not understand now, but afterward, you will understand. Afterward. Like after what? Like after Jesus is done washing everybody's feet? Like after he's done washing Peter's feet, Peter will understand? What does Jesus mean by afterward, you will understand? All right, so we've seen Jesus do this a lot. We've seen Jesus multiple times throughout the gospel. Nicodemus, the whole conversation about bread, whole conversation about water and light in John 9, I believe, 7 through 9. We've seen Jesus take physical realities or physical practices and look at them through a spiritual lens. And Jesus is doing that again here with foot washing. Jesus is taking a physical thing and doing something servitudinally in this practice, but he's casting it into a spiritual sense, right? Now, Peter's not going to see it, just like Nicodemus didn't see it, just like other people hadn't seen it. Peter's not going to see that Jesus is throwing this beyond just washing feet. And Jesus gives us a clue that he's doing this by this statement here. He says, what I'm doing you do not understand now, but you will understand afterward. After what? Jesus is referring to his impending death, burial, and resurrection. In other words, Peter, you don't get it today, but on Sunday, you will get it. Right? It's Thursday afternoon, Thursday evening, you don't get it tonight. Give me about 4 days, and then you're going to get it. So here's what we need to realize. From this point forward, everything that Jesus is going to mention to Peter and the disciples, we got to look through the post-resurrection, Jesus is dying, buried, and rising again lens. We got to look through it through that lens. We got to look at it through that lens. So Peter, in typical Peter fashion, says, well, maybe Jesus didn't understand me by my question, so I'm just going to make a declarative statement. Jesus, you ain't washing my feet. And look what he says. You shall never, verse 8, you shall never wash my feet. Pretty strong words, isn't it? Now listen to what Jesus responds with. The second half of verse 8. If I do not wash you, you have no share with me. That's kind of harsh, isn't it? Jesus meets Peter where he's at. Pointed statement from Peter, pointed statement from Jesus. What does Jesus mean? Jesus means, first let's talk about the language and then we'll talk about interpret it. If I do not wash you, in other words, if I don't wash your feet, you don't have a share with me. Why? Because it's about submission. It's about accepting what Christ is going to do. Again, Jesus is taking a physical reality and looking at it through spiritual terms. So he's equating foot washing with believing in who Jesus is as the Savior, Son of God, Savior of the world, who's going to die on the cross in just a little while, hours, be buried and rise again. And so he's saying, Peter, the spiritual reality side of it is, Peter, if you don't believe in me, and you don't believe in what I'm going to do, who I am, what I'm going to do for you, then you and I, we cannot have fellowship together. That's what that word share means. We cannot have fellowship together. Okay? So Peter, again in typical Peter fashion, goes completely overboard. Because in verse 9, Peter says, in essence, hey, just give me a whole bath then. Like, don't stop with my feet. Do my hands and my head as well. Like, I'll just take a bath, Lord. And then Jesus responds in verse 10. And he says, the one who has bathed does not need to wash except for his feet, but is completely clean. And you are clean, but not every one of you. All right, so what's Jesus talking about? Now remember, again, Jesus is viewing this from what is about to happen. And so Jesus, in essence, is saying, if I've totally cleansed, let me give you an illustration. This will make it easier. All right. So let's imagine tomorrow morning you take a bath, okay? And let's imagine you have pets, cats, dogs, whatever. And they need to go outside. And you've taken a shower. You are completely clean. You're about to put your clothes on, but the dogs are begging to go outside. They need to go to the potty too. So you let the dogs out, and you decide to walk outside, since this weekend it's not Siberia like it was last weekend. But you forget that it rained a lot yesterday. All right? And so you walk out, and lo and behold, the gutter broke. And there's a puddle, and you don't realize it, and you step right in it, barefooted and all. Right? And your feet are what? Disgusting. Now, are you gonna take time to take an entire shower over again? You may not have time. What you gonna do? You're gonna go back inside and do what? Wash just your feet. That's exactly the physical reality that Jesus is using. The spiritual reality is, hey, look, Peter, if you believe in me, and you, to use our language, Peter, if you give me your life, if you get saved, I don't need to bathe you all over again every day. You just need to wash your feet from time to time because you get in the mud where you really shouldn't be. Hey, look at me. Several weeks ago, we talked about Psalm 85. Now look, I couldn't have planned this. I'm not that good. But we talked about Psalm 85, written by the sons of Korah. And in that psalm, we saw that the sons of Korah put forward a dilemma that each and every one of us face. Do y'all remember it? I had to go back and look at my own notes, okay? Here's what the sons of Korah, the dilemma they give us is. Even though we've experienced forgiveness, oftentimes we realize we still need more of it. Y'all remember that one? A little bit? Kind of, oh yeah. Jesus, the message that in Psalm 85 that hundreds of years before the sons of Korah gave to Israel, that's the same message that Peter is receiving from Jesus. Peter, if I've forgiven you, I don't need to forgive you all over again. You just need to confess when you go traipsing through the mud where I've told you not to go. Because come on, look, I know y'all are great people. And I know many of you love the Lord with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. But each and every one of us is going to get our feet dirty this year in the mud. Because we're going to go where we shouldn't go. Right? Because some of us, all of us, we just got that streak in us. Right? We're going to do something and we're going to go wrestle around in the mud when the Lord said, hey, probably not a good idea. We don't need to take a bath. We just need to wash your feet off. And that's exactly what Jesus is telling Peter. Now, after this, we can assume, and I think with good reason, that Peter acquiesces to Jesus's offer to wash his feet, and Jesus finishes catches all the disciples' feet. All of them. All 12. Right? And after that, in verse 12, the scene changes slightly. John says, when he had washed their feet, so when Jesus had washed their feet and put on his outer garments and resumed his place, he said to them, and then he's going to talk to them and give us this long discourse, but I only want to highlight a couple things out of it. And the beginning is verse number 16, because the entire statement or a little discourse of talk that Jesus gives the disciples could be summed up in verse number 16, because that's kind of the hinge statement of it. He says, truly, truly, I say to you, a servant is not greater than his master, nor is a messenger greater than the one who sent him. In other words, guys, I expect you to follow me. And wherever I go, that's where you're supposed to follow. And whatever happened, whatever I do, that's what you should do. And whatever happens to me, you should expect that to happen to you. And none of you in this setting, because Jesus is going to use this kind of same language in the context of sacrifice later, of personal sacrifice on their own part. But here Jesus is using it in the context of service. And then Jesus is basically saying, if I can paraphrase it slightly, none of you is too good to do what I just did for other people. Right? Because that's what he says pretty much in verses 14 and 15, the two previous verses. He said, if I then, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. For I have given you an example that you also should do just as I have done to you. So, what is Jesus referring to? Is Jesus setting out a command that we've kind of fell away from, that we ought to be washing people's feet? Should your Sunday school teacher, Mr. Robert, you going to start washing people's feet on Sunday morning? Right? Next Sunday, right? Y'all come, right? Should the deacons, should Mark and Ernie kind of wash their feet of their people in kind of where they sit? No, that's not Jesus. Again, remember, what did we say? Jesus is throwing this spiritual reality, this physical reality, into a spiritual sense. So what's he doing? He's not saying that the disciples need to carry around a bucket just so whenever they meet somebody, they can wash their people's feet. What he's saying is they should be willing to serve the people they come in contact with, just like Jesus served them. Right? They should be willing to do whatever it takes to serve other people, just as Jesus served them. Now, we read our verse. Listen to me. Our verse for the month is John 13:34. All goes well, we should talk about this verse next week. I'll read it for you again. It says, a new commandment I have given you, that you should love one another. Now, here's the key statement. Jesus could have put a period right there. Love one another. But he doesn't. He puts another little punctuation. He says, just as I have loved you. That's a big difference, right? Should love one another. That's good. Just as I have loved you. In the same way Jesus says about service, you should also do just as I have done to you. So whatever service looks like, it should look like what Jesus did for these disciples. Now Jesus obviously is back with the Father, and he's never washed your feet, never washed my feet, right? But he is clearly... We know the end of the story. He's went to the cross. He was buried and rose again for the forgiveness of our sin. And so as we translate this into application, I think there's two questions that we got to ask. I'll hit the first one really quickly because I want to hone in on this service one. The first, question of application is, do you believe in Jesus? That's a common theme that's come up, right? Because Jesus is asking Peter, do you believe in me? That's in essence what he's asking. If you believe in me, then you're going to let me wash your feet because you believe in who I am. But here's the real question, or the second, and the one I want to highlight on is, are you serving others like Jesus served you? Are you serving others like Jesus served you? Because really, that's the question that Jesus, or the point that Jesus is trying to drive home to these 12 guys in the room. Right? Even the one who betrayed him. Right? Are we going to serve others like Jesus has served us? Now look, I have a lot of pictures in my office, but I only have three on my desk. Only three. If you've never been in my office, there's a plethora of stuff up there. There are only three pictures or framed items. There's a lot of other junk. Three photos or framed items. One is a picture we take at the beach every year. In fact, I told Holly, I was like, I have yet to put our current beach picture in this frame. So they're all right here. I've got a desk that's shaped like an L. This is kind of the workspace. My computer is here, and they're all right here. So one of them is a picture of all four of us at the beach. Another one is a little small frame that's about this big. And it's a dried flower from a high schooler's funeral. I had an 18-year-old in my youth group in Athens. He died of cancer, one of the greatest students I've ever met in my entire life. Love the Lord, a great impact. There are no telling how many people are in the kingdom of God today because of this young man. And so I kept that. Here's the other one. And this moved with me. So I've had this on my desk for over 7 years. It's this picture right here. Maybe hard for you to see. All right. Basically, at the top, it's like a kind of an Egyptian scene. And at the top, this picture up here, there's like a big block. And there's a guy sitting at a desk pointing forward. And then there's these three guys trying to pull the block. And it says, boss. The bottom one is the same picture with one exception. There's no guy sitting on top of the block. There's now four guys, or four stick figures, pulling the block. And the one in the front is pointing the way to go. And this one is titled Leader. Now look at this, every day, right? Because I don't want to be this, I want to be this. There's a difference between a boss and a leader. Bosses tell people what to do, leaders show people what to do. Okay? Now, I think that we could easily change the titles or the lettering on this and put this one as, and say this one is being served, and this one as serving. Right? Because see, a lot of us want to be served. We want people to dote on us. We want people to comment on our Facebook posts. We want people to like our tweets and to share our TikToks and to comment on and ask us why we're not here. And we haven't seen you in 2 weeks. We want them to call, but we ain't nary a time willing to do that for somebody else. So let me ask you a question. Guys, men, if I were to ask your spouse which one of these you were, in a moment of clarity, what do you think they would really say? Because if they say this, we ain't doing it right. Wives, if I were to ask your husband in a moment of clarity, in a moment of honesty, and they weren't afraid of getting in trouble, which one of these you were, what would they say? If they answered this one, you ain't doing it right. Hey, employers, if I were to ask the opposite of you, if you're an employee, if I were to ask you, ask your employer, which one of these you are, being served, serving, what would they say? If you're an employer and I asked your employees which one of these you are, what would they say? Right? I hope they say this one. Because I hope that even though you're the person at the top of the pyramid, that you're still serving others as Jesus served you. Because that's exactly what this passage is calling us to do in daily life, no matter what. Jesus don't give us no caveat, and there's no there's no parentheses and footnote that says, oh, Jesus added, well, if you're in this situation, it don't matter. Jesus says, you should do just as I have done to you. And so, like, I don't know, there may be a lot of other ways we could have started the year sermon-wise, but the reality is this is probably as good as we could have picked. And look, I had no idea this is where we would be when we planned all this stuff out. Right? But God did. Because see, you and I are going to do a lot of things this year. We're going to go a lot of places. We're going to see a lot of people. We're going to have hundreds, millions of interactions this year. In person, on social media, at the grocery store, online, at the ballpark, at the band recital, at the play, at the concert. Millions of interactions with people. And I think the greatest thing we could do this year is be this guy right here. Serving others just as Jesus has served us. So I don't know what your goal is for this year. I don't know what your word is for this year. I don't know what your motto for the year is. If you're into that, if you're doing that, but look at me. You would find no greater one than serving others. And so that's your challenge this year. That's my challenge this year. As we look forward into 2023, let's make this year about serving others together. Thanks for listening. For more information about Valley Grove, visit our Facebook page or website, valleygrovechurch.org.